Blog Talk Radio.
Live and bass from Memphis, Tennessee, this is Grizzly Bear Blues Live, hosted by Joe Mullinax.
Rhyme ruler, the mind of the master, the prime poet designed for disaster, a crime candidate, the light heavyweight, I might levitate right through the heaven's gate, rhymes record break neck spines and vertebrae, the bumping plane like Kanye, I heard him say, it's murder one when he murder tracks, I'm a dirt bag, flirting with songbirds and Birkin bags, my first rap, catch Roberta Flack, I'm a certified Mac, but I'm sure you ain't heard of that. Slim Thug and them hoes, they been loving the flow. They been hunting for men like in Vogue. And I'm in season.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, welcome to a brand new installment of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. It is so wonderful to be back here with you after a break for some personal reasons early on, and then it kind of fed into the holiday, and we just decided, you know, we're going to hit pause for a little bit. We'll come back in the new year. Here we are, and we're excited. We got a great first show of 2015 upon us here. And before I bring in Chip, I'm going to bring in our managing editor over at grizzlybearblues.com, Chris Faulkner. Chris, I don't know if you've realized this. Maybe you do now that I've promoted it a little bit, but this is our one-year anniversary, Chris. We started this podcast about a year ago today, not exactly a day, but around this date, 1 year ago, we began Grizzly Bear Blues Live, and I, for one, am proud of how far we've come.
Definitely. I actually didn't realize that. That's pretty amazing. I'm impressed, and Joe, you've grown in leaps and bounds, I would say, from when we started that a year ago, so... Look at us getting on, you know, radio folk and nationally published writers and stuff. It's come a long way, man.
We have come a long way. I'm pretty excited about it. Forgive me for maybe being a little too excited about it for some, but, you know, we enjoy what we do here, and when we first thought of the podcast, it was really a great idea that Chris helped me along with. And I'm appreciative to him, and I'm appreciative to everybody who's listened and made it so that the show can continue to air. And I'm also thankful to the people that we've added along the way, such as my wonderful producer, Chip Williams, who once again joins me this evening for the entire program. Chip, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing excellent. It's good to be back on the Blog Talk Radio airways. Nice to be back recording a podcast again. We took a nice little break there, but it's definitely time to... hit the ground running with this thing again. I'm excited for the guests we've got coming up.
And it's certainly not like there's any lack of news or discussion points to be had here, whether it's the Zach Randolph injury the past nine games or so. He's been out, and that's definitely affected the Grizzlies. Whether it's the Mark Stein report today from ESPN.com about potential targets that the Grizzlies may be interested in trading for as the Western Conference trading deadline arms race has officially begun these past couple of weeks. So we have plenty to talk about in Grizz Nation tonight. We will discuss those topics and others during our first segment of the show. We always do with our managing editor, Chris Faulkner. Grizzly Bear News, we'll get started with that here after the rundown of what's going to be going on the show tonight. Then at about 7:30 or so Central Time, 6:30 or so Central Time, we will have Matt Arlichta of GrizzlyBearBlues.com, senior staff writer. He'll be joining the program. And, you know, Matt really does a pretty good job. He's one of our better writers, and he's a big Jordan Adams fan and that kind of stuff. So we're excited to have Matt back on the show. We're going to talk to him about the playoff race in the West. Jordan Adams, I'm sure, will come up. Jeff Green, I'm sure, will come up. And excuse me, I misspoke on the time earlier. That will be at 7:05 Central Time. Around then, we will talk with Matt. And obviously, if you're listening to the podcast version of the show, the time's kind of irrelevant, but I'm just trying to help out our live listeners. Then we'll move on to our final segment of the evening, right around 7:30 or so Central Time. We will have, pretty excited about this, Chris Harrington, arguably the very best of Grizzly writers out there. I would say Kevin Leip's out there too, but you know, Chris Harrington, certainly one of the leading voices on the Memphis Grizzlies in the Memphis media, and we're excited to have him on the show. He's of the Commercial Appeal. He also writes for ESPN's True Hoop. We're going to talk to him about analytics. We're going to talk to him about some of his recent pick and pop articles. We're excited to have him on the show here in about an hour as we take a look into January and beyond and what these Grizzlies need to do to have some success moving forward. Our show is an interactive show. At least we try to make it as interactive as possible. Make sure that you're following us on Twitter at GBBLive. We'll talk about the Grizzly Bear Blues Live question of the day during this first segment, and that's another way that you could have gotten involved in the program tonight. But you can tweet us during the show, and we're more than happy to interact with you. My Twitter account personally is at Joe Mullinax. You can follow me there. Tweet me at my personal account. Certainly always happy to talk Grizzlies. You can follow our producer, Chip Williams, at Chip Williams Jr., and you can follow the managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com, Chris Faulkner, at Faulkner Memphis. Our chat room is also available and open tonight, another great way to interact and talk to us as the show goes on. If there's something you want to chime in on, if there's something that you want to interact with us about and just kind of get our thoughts, or maybe you want to counter something we're saying with an interesting point, Twitter and the chat room are all great ways to do it. So plenty of ways to interact. And there's plenty of things to discuss, which is why we are going to get right into our Grizzly Bear News segment. Chris Faulkner, good sir, if you would please give everybody a rundown of some great things that they could check out on the site as they are listening to the show.
Well, we've had a busy week with game coverage, obviously, and that's what we've pretty much had go up on the site up until today, but we've been doing a great job with the game coverage this season. Very proud of what everyone's been doing, and we've had multiple sort of recap takes on a lot of the games, and I like to think that we're getting a little bit of everything incorporated into that. But today we had a piece go up from Matthew Bishop, who took a look at the Grizzlies' struggles to put away some of the weaker teams in the NBA, and there's definitely some truth to that, and will be something to watch going forward too. But everyone should take a look at that, because he lays out a lot of the numbers that kind of align with that thinking. And then just about an hour or so ago, I published a piece by Kevin Young that takes a look at the Twin Towers lineups for the Grizzlies, that being Marc Gasol and Kostas Koufos. And Kevin is definitely a big Kostas Koufos fan, and he kind of gets barbed up a little whenever the trade rumors start turning out involving Kostas. So there's definitely a lot that can be taken advantage of with that lineup for the Grizzlies. It'll just kind of come down to how much Jaeger is able to utilize that as opposed to what they can get in return for Kostas, since he's probably not going to be back with the Grizzlies next season. But obviously the biggest news of the day was the trade rumors from Mark Stein that came out very late last night. But it's already kind of evolved as the day has gone along, since Miami has now rebuffed the interest that the Grizzlies had in Luol Deng. So now we're kind of left with Jeff Green and what they can do, what Jeff Green might cost the Grizzlies. But of course there's a lot of other players out there. But guys, what do you kind of feel from the rumors today? I mean, regardless of what kind of happens with these two players, we can at least say now that the Grizzlies are looking to make a move, and it looks like it could possibly be a pretty big move.
And I personally think it would be foolish to not attempt to make a move. I think that you have to look around at the Western Conference, and you have to see that, you know, Rondo being added to the Dallas Mavericks, and even though it's, you know, been hit or miss so far, it looks like he might be a better bench player for them than a starter. But Josh Smith is an addition to the Houston Rockets, who at the least is an athletic defender who's going to cause problems in the playoffs. And then you have the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are going to sneak up on everybody at some point and get back into this playoff hunt. San Antonio Spurs will get healthier and healthier. I don't think they're quite done yet. And then you have other teams that are just going to improve as the season goes on. And the Grizzlies Steeler without a true, and people get at me on Twitter and on the blog about this all the time, but they're still without a true longer wing who can play that three position traditionally. I realize that Tony Allen has defended Kevin Durant. I realize that maybe height and length and all of that are, you know, there's a bunch of conversation that can be had there, but I think we can all agree that a 6'8", 6'9" guy out there, instead of either Courtney Lee or Tony Allen to guard longer and taller wings, would be nice to have, or at least I think that we can at least agree in principle that that theory makes sense. So Jeff Green, according to that theory, makes sense, but you also have to dig deeper into the numbers, not just the height and the size and the length. And, you know, especially since Rondo was traded, Chip, he really hasn't been playing all that well. His last 10 games, he's shooting 38% from the floor. His rebounding numbers are down from what his average had been as the season had gone on. He really seems to have gone in the tank a little bit. And this is a guy that you're trading if you're the Memphis Grizzlies, as Chris just said. You know, this is somebody who, this is a big move. You're thinking this could possibly be the piece that puts you over the top. Jeff Green may not be it, especially for the price that Boston is looking for.
Absolutely. Getting Jeff Green is not the worst thing in the world. I've always kind of somewhat defended Jeff Green. I've had, you know, people tell me that he's just not a very good basketball player. And, there may be some truth to that, that Jeff is not perfect for the Grizzlies. He's not necessarily your first option or even your first, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 options. But he would bring an element to the Grizzlies that they don't have right now. Personally, it kind of seems like the Luol Deng stuff has kind of been put to bed by the Miami Heat. But that's the guy that you want if you're picking between the two. I think that's pretty clear cut. Just what Luol Deng brings with a big athletic wing defender who's been knocking down threes at a pretty high clip this year, has been very efficient, really kind of seemed to resurrect his career in Miami, because he did not look good in Cleveland. I think it was last season. He just did not play very well. The team was not very good, but he's done well for the Heat this year. And you kind of wonder if Miami ever got to a point, or they are going to get to a point before the deadline, where they just feel like they're not going to make the playoffs. And they try to maybe sell off a guy like a Luol Deng and get some assets for the future. I know Mark Stein brought up today that maybe Kosta Koufos and a future first-round pick would be able to pry Luol Deng out of Miami. And I think if you're the Grizzlies and that's something that comes up, I think you think very hardly about that and probably pull the trigger on that, because someone brought it up earlier, Kosta Koufos probably is not coming back to the Grizzlies next season. It's just about a foregone conclusion that he won't be back. They just can't afford to bring him back. So why not go ahead and see if you can make a move that helps you this year or helps you, you know, in the years to come, and fill that need of a wing, kind of a traditional small forward, something that you've needed for a long time. So I think that's, you know, it is kind of nice to see that the Grizzlies are out there looking to make a move, because some of these teams, you know, Dallas acquired Rondo, Houston acquired Josh Smith, for better or for worse, they did make that move, and that was a big move, that's a significant move, and those are a couple teams that are behind you right now in the standings, and, you know, it kind of is forcing the Grizzlies, you know, maybe, we need to look around and see if we can improve ourselves as well. So it is nice to have a front office like that that's always proactive and looking to improve.
Once again, you are listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Molinax. We are talking with our producer, Chip Williams, and our managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com, Chris Faulkner, in the Grizzly Bear News segment. We're discussing the possible trade for Jeff Green or Luol Deng that was reported by Mark Stein of ESPN.com, as Chris said, late last night, early this morning. The word was out. And the Luol Deng aspect of it, as you guys have already said, has kind of been squashed. The Miami Heat have come out, said that there, you know, is no interest on their end in that kind of a deal, at least at this point. But when you look at the Grizzlies and you look at fit and scheme and what assets they actually have that are tradable, you think about whether or not Jeff Green truly is a fit on this roster. And I'll ask you that more specifically here, Chris, in a moment, because Jeff Green is a guy who, he's kind of a tweener. You know, he might be a better face-up stretch four type, who probably offensively can do a little bit more in that small ball four role than he can on the wing consistently. Defensively, he can defend just about anybody in those forward positions, three or four. But in a role where his most effective place might be as a small ball four, well, once Zach Randolph is healthy, that's not going to be an option. You're not going to have that opportunity for more than maybe 10 or 15 minutes a game. So is Jeff Green really the best fit for these Grizzlies in terms of scheme and roster?
He's not my first pick. I'll definitely say that. He's obviously got some skills that, at considering his size, there's no one else on the Grizzlies that really comes close. But if you're going to shake up the roster at this point, which it seems like any significant move that they would make, they would have to give up a bigger piece. They wouldn't be able to just hawk off, you know, Quincy Pondexter and the second round pick to make any sort of significant move. If you're going to make a big shakeup, Jeff Green just doesn't sell me on the risk that you're taking there of giving up an asset and hoping that a newly brought in asset will integrate into the system quickly enough, especially considering his skill set and how he fits with the roster the Grizzlies have. It just doesn't feel comfortable to me. Like Chip said, he's not the worst player in the world to have a small forward on your team, but especially for the Grizzlies. But I would like to see them look elsewhere, and you never know with how the market goes. Jeff Green could become a lot more affordable here in 3 or 4 weeks, and the Grizzlies might be able to get him for, you know, something we might consider a steal, and then there's at least, you know, that option on the wing going forward. But you know, there's a lot of players out there, and there's still a lot of teams that could sort of decide to abandon ship and start rebuilding here in the next few weeks. So I hope they keep their options open.
And I think that that's important to look forward to, that idea of keeping your options open, because there will be other pieces available. There's a little bit of debate whether or not the Denver Nuggets are going into fire sale mode. You know, and forgive me for mispronouncing this if I do. Apparently I'm butchering names left and right here tonight. But Yusuf Nurkic, did I get that right, guys? Nurkic?
That's pretty close. Yeah, that's pretty close.
All right, well, we'll just go with that. And I'll ask Matt here in a little bit after he pronounces his name. Maybe he can help me with that one, too. And, you know, they say that Denver is a team that might improve now that they're giving him more time. So they might have fleeced Cleveland for those two first-round picks, is what some folks are thinking. So we'll have to see how it goes with Denver. But a guy like Wilson Chandler, his name has been floated around on the blog and Twitter and in other places, Chip. Wilson Chandler could be a good fit. You could also look into an Aaron Aflalo. He doesn't really necessarily fit the longer wing criteria, but he is a scorer beyond a shadow of a doubt, and the Grizzlies could always use help with that on the wing. So there will be other pieces, not just in Denver, but in elsewhere, as teams fall further and further back from the playoff race. You know, there's still a month left here. Is there anybody, you know, I obviously just mentioned Aflalo and Chandler. Is there anybody else on your radar, Chip, that maybe would possibly come at a bit cheaper price than a Green and a first-round pick like Boston's looking for?
It's tough to say. You know, it just kind of it'll depend on how this next month before the trading deadline goes. I think Wilson Chandler could be a very intriguing option. You know, obviously you would also take him ahead of Jeff Green if that's a guy that you could go get. I know a lot of people have discussed a backup power forward. Something that could be intriguing, and this is what, you know, kind of interests me in Boston, is the fact that Brandon Wright is just not really getting minutes ever since he was traded from Dallas to Boston. I guess Boston is opting to develop some of their younger guys, keep playing, I guess, Kelly Olynyk and Sullinger and some of those guys over Brandon Wright. Well, Brandon Wright was very productive in Dallas. And so, if you could get him and Jeff Green, that might make some people feel a little bit better, because I know that, the backup power forward situation has started to come into question, especially ever since Zach went down. But you look back in Denver and you've got Darrell Arthur, who's been playing pretty well for the Denver Nuggets. That's a guy that obviously the Grizzlies got rid of. And while I still think the Grizzlies won that trade, the Kostas Koufos-Darrell Arthur swap, I think that the Grizzlies would love to have Darrell Arthur back. So if you could do something where you swing Wilson Chandler and Darrell Arthur in a deal, you know, without mortgaging your future, I think that's the thing that, you know, you have to keep in mind here. You already owe a pick. You owed it to Cleveland. Now you owe it to Denver. They got swapped for Timofey Mozgov. So you don't want to start just giving away picks because that's how, you know, you really set yourself up for failure when you're, you know, just continually dishing out first-round picks. Just ask Brooklyn and the Lakers how that works out for them. But, you know, if you can go make a run at a title and you go get a guy like Wilson Chandler, I think that, you know, you do just about anything necessary without completely mortgaging your future to go make that happen.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Darrell Arthur, Brandon Wright. Another name from Boston would be Brandon Bass. That's another expiring contract power forward that would possibly be interesting, you know, maybe lighten the load of losing that Tayshaun Prince expiring. So that's a possibility. And I'm also taking names here from Chris Harrington's Pick and Pop. We'll talk to him about this a little bit here in a little while. But, you know, a Luis Scola from Indiana potentially could be a piece that could be pried away. Apparently in Philadelphia, they're already looking for somebody for Andre Kirilenko, who, you know, you would imagine would be cheap. You know, Philly really is interested in those first-round picks, but you're not getting a first-round pick for Andre Kirilenko. You're just not. So maybe you could get a cheap option there. But again, these are guys that aren't necessarily moving the needle sufficiently when it comes to talking about, you know, are you going to be a Western Conference champion, go to the NBA Finals representing the West? You really do kind of, it is kind of left at, you know, Luol Deng is the pipe dream. He's the guy who you're probably not getting the Miami Heat unless you make an offer they can't refuse, so to speak, something along the lines of, and I'm not saying I would do this, but a Tayshaun Prince, Jordan Adams, first-round pick down the road, you know, I think the Miami Heat would have to pause and take a look at that. But I don't think the Memphis Grizzlies would do that for the reason that you just said, Chip. You don't want to mortgage your future. Jordan Adams is the future. I think that he's going to be a significant role player on this team heading into the next season or two. And then obviously beyond that, you know, starter, potential sixth man type scoring wing off the bench. But do you give up that potential for the now? I think you only do that for the kind of player that a Jeff Green is. I don't know if you give up a Jordan Adams for Jeff Green. I think you do it for a Luol Deng, but not necessarily a Jeff Green. And that's kind of the line where I'm at right now. And the Jeff Green discussion, Chris, and we obviously had this a little bit in our round table discussion that we did today on the site as well. Jeff Green is kind of a lightning rod. There's some people who think he would be a big help, could potentially be that needle-moving piece. There's others, as you guys have already kind of discussed tonight, that think he can't play basketball at all, which is probably not fair. So when you look ahead to 2015 free agency here in the next 6 months or so, which has really been a major sticking point for a lot of people, that flexibility after re-signing Marcus Gasol, you would have enough cap space, thanks to Kostas Koufos and Tayshaun Prince's deals coming off the table, Zebo, Clutch coming through with that new deal kicking in, that'll be $6.5 million or so dollars off of the books for the Grizzlies as well. You're going to re-sign Mark, and you're still going to have some cap space to work with. Is it worth losing that flexibility in free agency to make a splash this year with someone, if we're all, for all intents and purposes, the best in theory they can do right now, by all reports, is Jeff Green?
The way it's looking, I can't really say that they shouldn't at least consider going all in and then sacrificing some of their opportunity in free agency this summer, just because I'm not quite sure what there's going to be out there for them. But, the Grizzlies probably need to do something to really be prepared for a full playoff run. Ever since that 15-2 start, they've pretty much played 500 ball. And while they could continue out the season playing 500 basketball and still finish with about, I think, 49 wins, that's not going to really set them up for the kind of run they want to go on. And, had actually been on the fence about this and really wanted to keep Costa, but when I, you know, kind of put it in the frame of the minutes that will be played in the playoffs, which is kind of where all of this is headed, Costa's not going to play very much in the playoffs. He didn't last year. There's no reason to really see him getting more of a role with the Grizzlies the second half of the season and going into the playoffs. So if you can find someone that can give you, you know, 25, 30 minutes a game in the playoffs, that is significantly better than someone else we have right now, I think you have to do that. And, you know, Marc Gasol is in a prime year. There's no telling, you know, he could stay at this level for another 5 years, or it could just be an anomaly sort of thing. And he's playing really well. Mike Conley's playing really well. You're getting, you're still getting a good bit out of Tony Allen and presumably Zach Randolph when he comes back. So you're getting Vince Carter warming up and at least still hitting shots from downtown. So I say you go for it. I don't know if it's Jeff Green, but if there's something out there, I'd be willing to give up a pick, honestly, even though that's not, you know, necessarily wise. I've come to terms that it's time to go for it this season.
Championships last forever. That's the bottom line here. They can fade. The banners might fade over the years, but they're going to be hanging in that building wherever the Memphis Grizzlies play, in Memphis, hopefully in the Forum for a very long time. But that banner would hang forever, and I think that it's important to keep that in mind, that you might lose a pick here or there, but and obviously with the Memphis Grizzlies, the trade with Denver a while back keeps, you know, first-round picks kind of in flux until 2019. You're giving up a piece for something. You have no idea what's going to be there in 2020, but what you know right now is that you have an opportunity to make a run to the NBA Finals. And you can't quantify that, even though people do economically, people do, you know, in terms of, you know, emotion in a city and what the good that it can do. But even then, you cannot possibly fully measure what that means to an organization for the rest of the time that they exist, what that means to a city, what that means to a fan base. Chip, in my opinion, I'm with Chris here. I don't know if I would, you know, go the route of a first and Adams or something in that kind of light. But if we're talking about giving up one of these rookies or a first-round pick, I would consider it. And if it was just a first-round pick, I'm doing it, even if it's for Jeff Green, because you need to do what you can to put yourself in the best position possible to win a championship this year. The window is closing.
I agree with that. I agree with most of it. I think that you do need to go for it this season, because we've seen when this team is at their full strength. I think when Zach Randolph is in the lineup, they're something like 21-5, or it's close to that. So you know, when this team is at full strength, they're pretty darn good. And then if you can add another wing, like some of the guys we've talked about, you know, that's huge. That just continues to that probably fills the biggest need that you've had, or the biggest hole you've had in this whole grit and grind era, if you still want to call it that, this most successful 4 or 5 year run that the Grizzlies have had in their franchise's history. And so if you can go get a guy like that, yeah, it's definitely worth giving up a pick. You know, I've kind of always been of the belief that you can trade Costa. It's not that big of a deal. I saw Matt Moore tweeting last night, and he said, and what made me think of this, what you were saying, Chris, in the playoffs, and I used to think exactly like you, but he said, well, what happens in game 6 when you're down, whatever, 3-2, and Marc Gasol picks up 2 quick fouls, and you have to roll someone out there to play 10 minutes of the first quarter? It's like, that's the Grizzlies' biggest hesitation in trading Costa Kufos, is that insurance for either a Mark injury or in the playoffs, Mark's foul trouble. Because I agree, he is completely underutilized right now. He's playing, what, maybe 14, 15 minutes a night. He's certainly more talented and deserving of more minutes. But he is a huge luxury to have going forward. And I do understand that you're going to lose him in the offseason And so, yeah, if you can go get a huge wing that helps you that much, it's probably worth giving up. But if it's something that where you're kind of on the fence about, probably just hang on to Kufos then and see if maybe you can, you know, move a Tayshaun and a first-round pick and try to get something like that. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. There's a lot of options here going forward. And, you know, another thing is you'll kind of see, maybe get a little more insight as to who kind of calls the final shots, because we all know that John Hollinger is not a huge fan of Jeff Green, as we've seen from the blog post. I think it's up on Grizzly Bear Blues right now. That John Hollinger kind of ripped Jeff Green. So maybe if they end up going after Jeff Green, we know that, you know, Chris Wallace kind of has the ultimate control. There's a lot of variables, a lot of things working here.
And, Chris, we'll get you out of here on this. I kind of want to get, and I think that you put it pretty well earlier about where you stand on a trade and with Jeff Green. Obviously, in a perfect world, you hold on to Kosta Kufos because of the reasons that Chip just outlined. He's one of the best rim protectors in the NBA off the bench, certainly, possibly overall. And he's good Marc Gasol insurance. Where do you stand on holding on to Kufos? Do you think another – I personally would say another big would have to be brought in if you trade him, unless you're able to swing, you know, maybe a Brandon Wright, as you guys talked about earlier. That would be possibly a good situation to try to bring him in and replace him. Is Kosta – where do you stand on Kosta moving forward?
If you're going to move Kufos, you've got to – already have everything else lined up and ready to go, especially with Zach being out right now. If he stays out for any considerable period of time, they would have to have something lined up, another big body to come in and, at least take up space. My gosh, they can get pretty small if you take Kufos out of there, because even with Tayshaun at the four that you're talking about, freaking Scarecrow at the four spot. So, I would assume that if they went something that drastic, they would already have either signed someone or pulled something from the D League or made an arrangement to be set up, because, you know, it'd be scary to be going forward with John Lohr as your primary number four for any stretch of time. So I would, with any trades, this goes back to the amount of time that still left to the trade deadline and how that time can really alter the landscape. I say be patient. It doesn't look like anyone is dying to trade for Jeff Green, or, there aren't other moves imminent around the league, it seems, around wing players the Grizzlies might want. So I say wait it out for just a minute and see what you can get here in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. I think you're onto something there, and I really do believe that these Grizzlies in this front office, whether it be Chris Wallace making that final decision, how loud John Hollinger's voice will be in that process, the Grizzlies are going to do what is best for the franchise. They have, between the Rudy Gay trade, obviously getting Kosta Kufos to begin with, the trade for Courtney Lee, you know, they've done a lot of moves up until this point now that you can feel comfortable with where they're going moving forward, regardless of who's in charge now. I think that Hollinger has been a consistent voice there. He'll continue to be. And they have not given me a reason to not trust them. So I think that we'll see where it goes. I'm interested in seeing how our guests feel about it, and we'll certainly get their takes, their hot sports takes, here in a moment. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it, as always, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you, Joe, and I tip my hat to you guys for setting up a great return show with two spectacular guests. And Matt's always my favorite, love his writing, and it's an honor to have the blog father, if you will, Chris Arrington, on our show. Yes, you heard that here first.
That was pretty good. I'll give you credit where credit's due. That was pretty good, Chris.
And I'm out. See you guys.
Thank you, Chris. Once again, that was Chris Faulkner, the managing editor of GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Give him a follow on Twitter at Faulkner, Memphis. He always joins us for the Grizzly Bear News segment. And before we move on to our second segment of the show, I want to make sure I give a special shout-out to Audible.com, one of our great sponsors. And we're going to announce in the next few weeks some extensions of sponsorships that we're excited about, not quite ready to unveil just yet, but we're really looking forward to increased opportunities for sponsorships through the site and through the show to help with our ultimate goal of donation, and we'll refer more to that here in a moment. But first, back to Audible.com. It is a wonderful audiobook site that you can order or choose from over 150,000 audiobook downloads, fiction, nonfiction, all kinds of different types. You can download it as an MP3, you can put it onto a CD, put it up in the cloud, wherever that may be, and you can access your book from anywhere. And you can take it with you as you travel. If you're on the go, put it on that MP3 player, as I said. What does Grizzly Bear Blues Live get out of it? Well, if you go to www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues, sign up for the service using that link, you will get a wonderful membership to audible.com. You'll get an audiobook download to start with. So you can download a book right away after signing up. And the proceeds that go from that sign-up fee are going to go towards a donation to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee, something that we're very passionate about, that I personally am very passionate about, having lived in Memphis for several years and knowing the great work that St. Jude does for kids and families and children who have life-threatening ailments. The families that pass through St. Jude don't pay a dime for the places they stay and for the services they get while they're there, but obviously they cost money, and the ability of fundraisers there at St. Jude and the donations of people like you really help in terms of helping with that, with the cause of making sure that those folks are taken care of. So sign up for www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Get a great, great deal for yourself and help an even better cause. Our next guest heading into segment two is a senior staff writer for grizzlybearblues.com. He is also one of my favorites, as Chris Faulkner said. I would say he's one of the best out there in terms of writing about the Grizzlies. I'm excited to have him back on. He's a great guy, and I'm going to butcher his name, and he's going to correct me here in a moment. His name is Matt Hardlichta. Now, Matt, the last time I had you on the show, I could have sworn that you told me that's how to pronounce your name.
I think people are just having fun with you. You did pretty well. You did pretty well.
Okay.
I've heard words.
Well, will you say it for me? Because Mullinax isn't easy to pronounce for people, and, you know, it does kind of bother me when people say I mispronounce. I want to get it right. How do you pronounce it?
It's pronounced just like it's spelled, Hrdlicka.
Hrdlicka. Okay.
Hrdlicka.
See, that makes me feel better. Okay. Hrdlicka.
Yeah.
All right. Hrdlicka. I'm good to go now. Thank you, Matt. We appreciate you coming on and joining us here on the show. Obviously, we'll have Chip along for the ride during our conversation here as well. But we'll get started as we look at, you know, almost being halfway home here. The Grizzlies have played 35 games now. They're 25-10. And you and I, Matt, we're going to kind of talk through just some basic, what do we know, what do we want, and where are we heading? So just three basic questions. And in terms of what do we know, you know, that's going to be more centralized on the playoff race. So let's take a look at the Western Conference, you know, 1-8. Still doesn't include the Oklahoma City Thunder, who you would imagine, barring some terrible catastrophe, will be somewhere in those figures along the way. I know they have to win a lot of games to get there, but they're the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're a pretty good basketball team. So you have to figure that they're going to figure in there somehow, even with the slow start that they've had. So obviously you have Golden State at 1 in the West. You have Portland at 2. You have the Memphis Grizzlies at 3. Dallas at 4, both tied 4 games back from the 1 seed. Houston is the 5 seed right now at 24-11. The Clippers are the 6 at 24-12. San Antonio is the 7 at 21-15. And then Phoenix currently pretty solidly in the 8 spot, 8.5 games back of Golden State, but they're 3.5 games up on New Orleans and 4 up on Oklahoma City. So, Matt, let's start there. We're taking a look at the West, the playoff picture. How do you see things shaking out? Do you see a ton of movement coming? Am I off base with my Oklahoma City thoughts?
No, I don't think so. I think the sort of the conventional wisdom is they're going to make it. I think it's going to be a little bit tougher. I'm really high on Phoenix. I think that Phoenix has a really good shot of staying in. And I think that a lot of the teams, the player movement recently, suggests that a lot of teams are kind of recognizing that maybe they're not good enough. You know, like you see Houston making additions. You saw Dallas with the big Rondo trade and Oklahoma City even adding Dion Waiters. You know, every team is sort of acknowledging, like, it's going to be really tough to make it. And if you make it, going far. I mean, I think Oklahoma City and any team outside of the top four or five is really looking at it saying, we just need to get in the playoffs. Like, San Antonio isn't at seven thinking, we've got to get to four. They're in there just hoping to get in. And so, you know, I think Oklahoma City's going to make it, but I don't know if Phoenix is the team that bounces them out. I really, really don't care for what Houston's been doing. I think that they've added some quote-unquote talented players that maybe may not help them as much as they think. And also, you know, the Clippers, I mean, we saw it in the game that they played against us. Their bench is so bad that, like, if Redick gets hurt, if Jamal Crawford gets hurt, Chris Paul's about to go on his January sabbatical. Any games he misses, and they're in for a world of hurt. Like, Simmons and Zach Lowe just did a podcast today saying, and Simmons was kind of hardcore, you know, the Clippers are going to be lucky to make the play. Well, he didn't say it that way, but he was very negative on their long-term ability to compete through the playoffs. And I think it's fair. I think they've got, like, their third best player is DeAndre Jordan, and, like, they can't even play him at the end of games. So, like, they have nothing else. So I think the Clippers, and I may be alone on this, but I think Houston, they should really be looking at I would be worried if I was a fan of either of those two teams about making it and possibly Phoenix and OKC jumping over me. So that's kind of where I think. And as it relates to the Grizzlies, I think that the Grizzlies are going to be a top four seed. They've weathered a Zach Randolph injury. And I think that before the season, I thought that the three seed was in play. And that was even before Oklahoma City had all the rash injuries. And I still think, you know, if they don't get the three seed, I still think that they might be the third best team in the West.
I believe, and I'm with you on the Clippers idea there. Obviously, Jordan is an impact player when it comes to rebounding. In theory, given his athleticism, you would imagine he would be a very good defensive player. The numbers don't always back that up. But, you know, a team like the Clippers, I know you said you're a big fan of Phoenix, but you have to imagine if Oklahoma City hadn't gotten that rash of injuries early on, you know, one of those two teams, even maybe San Antonio, who's also dealt with injuries, somebody's out and Oklahoma City's in at this point. But it's going to take a lot for OKC to get back into the fold. Now, if you look at a team like Houston, and you make an interesting point with the Rockets, how sustainable is their level of play in terms of defense? They're one of the top defensive teams in the association right now. It really is just kind of a change of philosophy, or maybe not a change of philosophy, but their personnel is coming through in a way that they hadn't in the past, especially guys like James Harden. You just ask yourself how sustainable it is. And the Grizzlies, like you said, obviously they've sustained the Zach Randolph injury. Reports have come out, you know, the past few hours or so, that it's looking more and more likely that Zach is going to try to go Friday night against the New Orleans Pelicans. It's not a guarantee, but he participated in full contact practice today. It's looking more positive than it has in a while. Memphis standing and staying at that three seed certainly looks likely, and I think that, you know, they can consistently stay there if they find a way to maybe make one more little move, maybe not, you know, a major one, as has been discussed already, but we'll get to that here in a moment. Now, what do we want? That kind of ties into our second question here, Matt. The idea of, do we think a move is necessary? Do we want a wing? Do we want a backup power forward? Because John Lewis doesn't quite look like he can consistently be the answer there. As Grizzlies fans, bloggers, writers, whatever, what do we want, you know, looking ahead towards the next games on the schedule heading into the playoffs?
What do we want? What do we want? I would say I don't know if the team need – I don't know if they need anything. I mean, because, like, you know, I still have faith that Vince is going to be okay in the end. And, I mean, every game that goes by kind of makes me feel a little bit more skeptical about that. But I still think he's going to be okay. And in theory, he brings the ball handling. Even though he really isn't driving the ball very much, which is part of his problem. But I would say if they – if they're going to make a trade, they need to make a significant upgrade. I don't think that the answer is just finding, you know, another body to take John Lure's minutes, because if John Lure was, you know, the third or fourth big, the fourth big, which is really what he is, like, those, he's fine for that, you know, and he offers a little bit of shooting that the other guys don't have. And I mean, problem is that he's starting. That's the problem. And he's trying to guard Paul Millsap, which nobody could do last night, even though Paul Millsap didn't have that great of a game, but he got past everybody. And then he was just dishing and initiating the offense and getting us scrambling. But, you know, the Luol Deng name was really strange to hear, you know, thrown out in trade, but that would be the type of, I mean, if we're going to make a trade, let's make it for somebody. I'm not in favor of giving up assets for somebody who just marginally makes, you know, trading out Tayshaun's minutes, trading out John Lure's minutes for somebody who makes a little bit, you know, does a little bit better. And I say all that saying, prefacing that the idea would be to give up future assets, whether it be picks or young players, for a minor upgrade. If I'm giving up that kind of stuff, you want a major upgrade, in my mind.
And I think that's fair. I would agree with that sentiment. I think that, you know, obviously some folks would maybe be a little bit more willing to part with one of those younger players, a Jarnell Stokes or Jordan Adams, than others would be. But I think that, you know, if you're talking about first-round picks, that those players might be more attractive to a team than, you know, a first-round pick from Memphis, because with all of the protections and all that, the Grizzlies, for several years, their picks are tied up. So it's really going to be a challenge seeing what kind of tradable assets the Grizzlies have. If you're hell-bent on holding on to Kosta Koufos, which you can certainly make an argument for, that pretty much settles you at Tayshaun Prince and Quincy Pondexter and Nick Calathes, maybe, for what, a ham sandwich? To borrow a phrase from my buddy Dave. What do you trade that for? Who wants that package aside from the expiring of Tayshaun? So you're going to have to give up something of value, and that's why they pay these front office guys and they do their jobs and their research, trying to figure out where that balance is and where that line is. But I think you're onto something there in terms of you don't want to mortgage the future for one passing fleeting year, but at the same time there's a balance, because the window for the Grizzlies getting to the Western Conference Finals, the NBA Finals, may never be this open again. So it really is an interesting philosophy. And as we talk to Matt Erdlicka, Matt Erdlicka, our senior staff writer over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. As we continue our conversation about where we're heading, it kind of ties in to, you said you saw us settling in at the 3 seed, so we'll leave it at that for now. That probably puts the Grizzlies at, you know, maybe a 54, 55, 56 win season, which is kind of right where they are in terms of pace. Where do you see the Grizzlies going in terms of roster? Do you see them making that major move that you described? Do you see them kind of staying put? What is this roster going to look like after the trading deadline?
I'll say this, just to go back to, or make a kind of side point, all these teams, I mean, all the front office guys, they all know who the great players are. They all know who the good players are too. The thing, the edge that the Grizzlies have had recently is plucking these diamonds out of the rough, whether it be John Lure, who, you know, we got in sort of a salary dump. They just had him tossed in. You know, in other years with other teams, when you're talking about dumping, you know, $6 million of salary for less than $1 million of salary, you're not getting any return. But we got John Lure, and John Lure's still on the team, and he's on a cheap deal. And he's, relative to his deal, he's really productive. You look at James Johnson last year, Nick Calathes. Like, this front office has proven that their edge is in filling out the back end of the roster.
Vino Udre even. I mean, they picked him up off of waivers. Nobody even wanted him last year, and we got him. So, you know, if we're going to be trading pieces and stuff, package a couple together and just have faith that your competitive advantage of building out the back end of the roster, just have faith that you can do it again, you know? So if you're going to throw in – before the season, I thought – I actually thought Kupas would be the most likely traded, but in my season preview, I put him second behind Courtney Lee. And it was for reasons of clearing salary that is really long and convoluted, and we don't want to get into that right now. But I still think Kupas, I think they move him. I would say like a slight edge to moving him for – I mean, I think they will swing for the fences. I think they're going to try to – I think they're going to do their due diligence on guys like Luol Deng, Aaron Aflalo, you know. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, they were kicking the tires on, like, you know, Ryan Anderson, Ty Lawson even. I mean, I know Denver wouldn't want to give him up, but and you wouldn't think that the Grizzlies would have the right assets to give him, but they're going to do due diligence on any way to upgrade the roster. And I really do think that they're going to try to add somebody really good. I could be way off. I have no sources. This is just, you know, idle speculation.
You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am the producer, Chip Williams. We're talking with Matt Ardlicka. I think I'm saying that right or close to right. Follow him on Twitter at The Real Ardlicka. I'm not sure how to spell that, Matt, but it's The Real Ardlicka on Twitter. He is a senior staff writer for Grizzly Bear Blues. Matt, one thing I want to ask you is, Quincy Pondexter, there were kind of a lot of expectations, or not a lot, that, you know, expectations were relative, but I think people thought that he could be a 3-and-D type player, or that's kind of what people thought, especially after the Western Conference Finals. And he just really has really struggled to find any kind of consistent minutes. But what are your thoughts right now on Quincy Pondexter?
I don't have any sources, but I think he's unhappy and he's underperformed. Well, you know, before the season, I wrote a bunch of stuff about how, you know, he's already off his rookie deal coming into this was the first year of his non-rookie deal. So he'd been in the league for 4 years, but I was writing about how the fact that we really didn't know how good he was yet because of injury and lack of role, lack of minutes. You know, there's not a lot of evidence that he's any good. I mean, there's a little, like, an inkling, you know, from the Western Conference Finals, and he was actually pretty good that year, but that was actually a year he missed some time, I think, with a knee injury or something. Like, he didn't play that much. And, you know, it may be – it's tough to move on from a guy who's only making $3.5 million a year. And I wouldn't be ready to, like, toss him by any means. But I think we're getting a picture of a guy who may not, maybe like an eighth or ninth guy at this point. I think there's more evidence that there's no evidence that he's a starter. There's none, you know. So the hope now is this a cost-effective rotation player or is he just a sunk cost? And I would still say that on the right team, if he's getting the minutes, you know, there's a good chance he still is a rotation player.
Well, there is a guy on the Grizzlies roster, and, you know, it was kind of interesting. When this guy was drafted, I think that the fans were upset, and they were upset maybe not the fact that he wasn't a good basketball player. They were just upset that he wasn't Rodney Hood or whatever. He wasn't a small forward, and that seemed like the Grizzlies' biggest need, and that's Jordan Adams. Before Jordan Adams even played an NBA game, it seemed like, you know, the perception of him or the excitement level had done a complete 180, and people were so fired up for Jordan Adams. And that's another guy that he just cannot get on the floor. And, you know, whatever, he's a rookie. Jaeger kind of laid it out early, like, look, these rookies are not going to play a lot early on. But is it time to start finding Jordan Adams minutes, especially if you think Quincy Pondexter is just a sunk cost, whatever, is it time to start finding him minutes?
Well, I mean, I think they should have been playing, you know, finding minutes from him from day one. I've been, you know me, I think you're setting me up to sort of toot the Jordan Adams bandwagon here. And I'm happy to do that because I love his game. I mean, he is a rookie. You're going to have growing pains. I mean, you can see. The one thing I will say about him is when he gets in the game, I love the fact that he's not trying to dominate the action. He's moving the ball. He only shoots like threes and like inside of 10 feet. He like hardly ever settles for these mid-range jumpers. At least in the, I missed some of his games. But at least in the games I've seen, like he's either going into the lane and getting contact. Sometimes it gets called, sometimes it doesn't. Or like in the Toronto game, he was only taking wide open threes. And I love that. You know, he's not going in like Quincy, you know, in garbage time, and Quincy's just, you know, he's going to shoot it every time. So I like the way, I mean, I think that's sort of, you know, some people would say he's being timid. He needs to take more. I mean, I think he just recognizes that he's not as good as some of these other guys, you know, and that maybe his role should be getting easy shots at the foul line or, you know, if I'm open, I shoot it. I actually like really think that's a good sign for him. I don't think that we're going to have selfishness issues. And I don't mean selfishness in a moral way. I mean it more in like a basketball sense where guys just don't understand what a great shot is, you know? And the other thing that he's shown is that he has great hands too. So, I mean, I don't want to be absolute about this, but I would definitely be trying to get him minutes over Quincy Pondexter at this point. You know, on random nights against even Denver, yeah, you know, like a decent Western Conference team. It doesn't even have to be Philadelphia, you know.
We are talking with Matt Ardlicka. Follow him on Twitter @TheRealArdlicka. That is HRDLICKA. Give him a follow, our senior staff writer, or one of our senior staff writers, over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. And looking at the week ahead here, Matt, as we continue on with Grizzly Bear Blues Live, I'm your host, Joe Mullinax, and our producer, Chip Williams, just got done talking Jordan Adams and Quincy Pondexter with Matt. And we look ahead to the schedule that's coming up for these Grizzlies. The next three games between now and our next show, the Grizzlies have New Orleans at New Orleans on Friday night. They host the Phoenix Suns on Sunday, and then they head, I believe it's Wednesday night, they're going to Brooklyn against the Brooklyn Nets, and that'll be the Lionel Hollins reunion, so that'll be an interesting one to watch. Zach Randolph more than likely will return in at least one of those games, possibly all three. Is this an opportunity for the Grizzlies to start to earn back maybe a couple of those losses that they picked up with Zach out? Do you see Memphis going 2-1 on this upcoming run? Do you think 3-0 is realistic? Possibly worse? Help us preview these next few games for the Grizzlies.
Well, I can tell you this much. My brother will be at the Pelicans game. I'm from Louisiana, and I know he's going to that game. So win or lose, blame my brother.
Fair enough.
He's a Pelicans fan. He's not a Grizzlies fan. He's born and raised in Louisiana. But, New Orleans is always a problem for us because their bigs give Zach, if he's playing, and Mark a little bit of problem. And Eric Gordon's not playing for them, which, you know, he's been not so great this year, but I think if Zach plays that, you know, and he can play, you know, normal Zach minutes and you get normal Zach Randolph, I think on balance that probably is a close win. They're going to kill the Brooklyn Nets. The Nets are terrible. What was the other game, the second game?
Second game would be the Phoenix Suns at home on Sunday
night.
Phoenix
Suns. Oh, man. Those are – I would say 1-2 might be the most likely case, and then 2-1. I think the Phoenix Suns are really good. And I know the Grizzlies dismantled them last time, but that was when the Grizzlies were humming. You know, if Zach doesn't come back 100%, and I think this team is sort of sided on – from a management standpoint of like holding guys out a little bit longer instead of rushing them back from injury. So you would assume Zach comes back and he's pretty good. But I the Phoenix Suns are a different team right now. I mean, they dismantled Toronto just fairly recently ago, and I think, I mean, I really do think Phoenix might be making the playoffs. I don't know if Oklahoma City bumps Phoenix. Phoenix might be the seventh seed. I think they're really good.
So you're thinking 1 and 2, and of those three, if you don't mind me asking, which one do you think is the win? Do you think they go into Brooklyn and pick off the Nets?
Oh, yeah, the Nets. The Nets are awful. Nets are awful. And
well,
we were,
fair enough.
We had a Twitter debate. We had a Twitter debate about whose fan base had the least to hope for. And, like, I was thinking the Nets in my head, and I was actually really surprised at thinking that. And everybody said the Nets. It was like 2-1 Nets or Knicks, like, over everybody else. Like, people think Philadelphia has a better future than the Nets right now. You know, Darren Williams is hurt. I don't know. They're going to kill the Nets.
Well, and obviously the Lionel factor will be big there, and they did lose, you know, Darren Williams to injury. You know, they're kind of banged up. Lionel seems to be dealing with kind of a culture change situation there in Brooklyn, probably kind of similar to what he had to deal with in Memphis to an extent. So it's going to be interesting to see how that game plays out. I think 2-1 is fair. I would hope for 1-2. I would hope for 2-1 personally. You're higher on the Phoenix Suns than I am, I think, especially with the Grizzlies being at home. But you could certainly see them pulling out a win against the Grizzlies. I don't think that's shocking by any stretch of the imagination. And the Grizzlies have always struggled with the Pelicans, or at least in the past couple of years they have, now that Anthony Davis is there. And he's a monster. If the Pelicans were a little bit better, he's the MVP of this league running away. It's not even close, I think. So that's going to be a challenge. There's no doubt about that. 1-2, I think that's a fair prediction. Matt, it's always great to have you on the show, and we will certainly have to have you on again in the future.
No Jeff Green. He's terrible.
No Jeff Green. Bottom line. Boom.
That's
it. That was Matt's point on Jeff Green. I like it. That's fair. Fair enough. And I'm sure there are several on Twitter right now rejoicing with you that you put that word out. You're certainly not alone in that opinion in terms of Jeff Green maybe not being the best option for the Grizzlies. Thanks again, Matt, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, you guys take care. Bye-bye.
All right, once again, that was Matt Hardlicka. Make sure you're following him on Twitter, @TheRealHardlicka. And he is really a phenomenal writer. I truly enjoy reading his stuff whenever he comes out with it. For me, it's must-read material. And he's opinionated about Jordan Adams, and he and I have disagreed with that a little bit along the way. Not necessarily that Jordan can play, but the drafting of him, he's always very intelligent with his arguments, and he's always respectful in terms of disagreement. He does it the right way. So I'm a big fan of Matt Hardlicka. I'm very glad that he joined us on the show tonight, and I'm very glad that you, the listener, have joined us on this episode of Grizzly Bear Blues Live. As we head into the final segment of the evening, I want to once again give a shout out to Audible.com, the wonderful audiobook service that enables you to download via MP3, put it on a CD, whatever you would like, over 150,000 audiobook options and titles. And you take those audiobooks, put them on whatever media device you would like, and you take them with you. Now, what does Grizzly Bear Blues Live get out of this partnership with Audible.com? We get the opportunity to make this world a better place, as I like to look at it. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital in Memphis, Tennessee is a wonderful organization that helps children with life-threatening ailments get the treatments that they need without their families having to worry about the money that it costs to get those treatments. And we at Grizzly Bear Blues Live want to make a donation to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital through our partnership with Audible.com and future partnerships. Our money that we're getting from these signups really has nothing to do with personal gain. We want to give it to St. Jude and help be a part of positive things in the Memphis community, helping out those in need. So once again, sign up for www.audibletrial.com/grizzlybearblues. Make sure that you sign up. You'll get an audiobook download, a membership, and you'll be able to enjoy that wonderful service and help a wonderful cause. Our guest joining us now, we are very excited about. You may have heard him on a podcast with one of the major NBA writers and members of Grant Land from ESPN, Zach Lowe. He is, I talked about Matt Ardlicka being one of the great writers of Grizzly stuff out there in the Grizzly and in Grizz Nation. I would say this guy is at the top of the list. We're excited to have him on the show. He is from the Memphis Commercial Appeal and ESPN's True Hoop Network. His name is Chris Harrington. Mr. Harrington, how are you doing this evening?
Doing good. How are you guys?
We're doing pretty well. We can't complain. Just talking a little bit of Grizzlies here on this Thursday night. We're excited to have you on the show.
I will strive for coherence.
I will strive for coherence. I like that. I think that's a good way to get started. If only we all could strive for that consistently. That would be
a
good
daily,
goal for us to have.
It's a daily struggle.
Absolutely. No doubt. As we look at the Memphis Grizzlies as they are consistently now, okay, talking about being coherent, the Z-Bo injury has made that a bit of a struggle. But looking back on that tough December that the Grizzlies just got out of, the beginning of January, obviously they've missed Zach Randolph a pretty good bit. And there really was an emotional roller coaster there in December and now heading into early January. The high that was that huge national television win against the Golden State Warriors, then they find a way in triple overtime to defeat the San Antonio Spurs in San Antonio. Then they go on a losing streak, they lose Zach, and they've really been, you know, up and down, in and out since. Looking at this team at 25-10, Chris, are there more questions than answers at this point?
I think there are an awful lot of questions, but I think the return of Zach Randolph, assuming he is healthy and gets back up to his previous level of production, is an awfully big answer. And so I think it's been one cut, one big cut, and lots of small cuts, and if you can patch up and heal the big cut, then that'll fix most of the problems. But it's not going to make a lot of these other little issues go away in terms of some of the wing production, which has been disappointing, frankly, almost across the board. I think Vince Carter, Quincy Pondexter have underperformed expectation. Courtney Lee has come back down to earth in a way that probably should have been predictable for most of us. I think a lot of us, myself included, had a little irrational exuberance about his start and thought that might continue despite, you know, a pretty long career track record. You know, I think Randolph being gone has exposed a lot of their problems with their front court depth, that when he comes back, that'll be help because those guys won't have quite so many minutes, but those problems are still going to be there. So I think even when they get Randolph back, they're going to be a really good team, but a good team that has a chance to get better and probably needs to try to get better if they're really going to be a contender.
You talked about Courtney Lee there and the possibly irrational thoughts of him possibly becoming this superstar that wasn't going to regress back to his own personal mean. I was certainly guilty of that as well, writing about him being a piece that, you know, potentially may have found a permanent home in Memphis, given his contract flexibility, given the fact that he was playing so well and really filling a role that the Grizzlies needed him to. Now that he's come back down to earth, do you think, you know, Courtney Lee, you know, at worst probably the, you know, the fifth or sixth best Grizzly on this roster, is he still a piece that we should look at as possibly being staying in Memphis? Or is he a guy that, you know, as you hear these rumors about trades, Matt Ardlicka in our last segment talked about thinking the Grizzlies are going to go big or go home this trade deadline, really trying to get a player of real substance. Courtney Lee would more than likely have to be a part of a deal like that. Do you think that would be worth it, losing Courtney?
I'm not convinced that he would be part of a deal like that. I think Courtney Lee is still a good fit in this lineup once you get Zach Randolph back. In terms of a guy who can make shots but doesn't need the ball a lot, I think he's a good fit in that starting lineup. But I think he is certainly not untouchable by any stretch. I think if they need to put him in a deal, they'll put him in a deal. But I don't think he's one of the more likely guys to move. I do think what could be likely if they go out and trade for a small forward in some of these deals that we've been hearing about or something along those lines, I think there's a chance that he moves back to the bench. Because if they had a starting caliber small forward without dealing Tony Allen or Courtney Lee, one of those guys has to move. And you know, you could argue the merits either way on the floor, but I think it'll be less disruptive to move Courtney. So I think there's a chance that his role could change going forward. it's certainly possible he gets moved. I think it's more likely his role could get changed as a consequence of a move.
And Courtney Lee off the bench, you know, as you said, disruptive in terms of chemistry. Tony Allen, it's kind of known that he performs better both literally and figuratively, mentally, physically, as a starter. But Courtney Lee coming off the bench just gives another scoring option, you know, pairing him alongside Vince Carter and Beno Udrah. You know, maybe they aren't as dependent on having to be those lone scorers. It just gives you more options. And if Coach Yeager is going to continue playing these all-bench lineups moving forward as the season goes on, it would be nice to have another scoring option. So you would imagine that Courtney Lee would strengthen that bench in a way that Tony Allen wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true, but I also think there's a degree to which I think that both those – everybody wants to start, but both those guys particularly, I think, feel more comfortable in the starting lineup playing off of those key players. Lee, because it helps him get open shots, and Tony Allen, because he can move without the ball and take advantage of Marcus Hall and Mike Conley's passing and that kind of thing. So I think either one of those guys would not be happy with that move, but if the Grizzlies go out and get a starting caliber small forward, something's going to have to give. And so – and, you know, I think Lee could head a number of different ways as the season moves on.
We're talking with Chris Harrington of the Commercial Appeal of Memphis, also of ESPN's True Hoop Network. Make sure you're following him on Twitter, at HarringtonNBA. He's a great follow, one of the best, if not the best, Grizzlies writers out there. Make sure that you're checking out his stuff on his pick and pops that we'll talk about here momentarily. The absence of Zach Randolph, you spoke about that a little bit ago, and it really has opened up the eyes in terms of weaknesses in the roster, particularly at that power forward spot. Do you see a possibility of somebody like a John Luehr growing into that role? Obviously, him as a starter, he's out of his element. But do you think that Luehr can be that fourth big for the Grizzlies moving forward? Or, and I know you'll talk about trades with Chip or with Chip here in a moment, but do you see him fitting into that? Do you think Luehr can be that for the Grizzlies in the future?
There's a school of thought within the team. I talked to some people last game, and while they certainly acknowledge that Luehr has been disappointing, I mean, off the record, they don't say that publicly, but while they certainly acknowledge that Luehr's been disappointing, there is a school of thought that he is better with the bench unit because the bench unit tends to play a little faster. Beno Udrih pushes pace. Usually you don't have Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol both on the floor. Obviously, they're not going to be both on the floor if Luehr's out there. But for the second units for this team tend to move a little quicker than the starting units. And there's the thought that Luehr functions better, and I certainly believe this to be true, that he functions better in a more up-tempo game than more the slow-down half-court game. And so there's the thought that he'll be better coming off the bench once the lineup gets back intact with Randolph. But I think even then, I mean, I think Luehr's been pretty disappointing this year. I'm a fan of his talent. I think his skill level relative to size and relative to sort of a sneaky athleticism, I think there's a lot of potential there to be a good bench player, and he's been that in spurts in two seasons. But I think, you know, his defense is still not up to speed, and he struggles with his confidence and his consistency. And I feel like if the playoffs started next week, Dave Biggers never said this, but I suspect he would not be comfortable playing him in the playoffs. Or Jarnell Stokes for that matter. And so I feel like they have to, unless something changes here in the next few weeks before the trade deadline, they need to upgrade that backup power forward slot heading into the playoffs, because I think you can play Tayshaun Prince there against the right matchups, but it's gotten to the point that I think Yeager would play Prince there regardless of the matchups, just because I don't think he would be comfortable with Luehr or Stokes in a postseason right now. And so I think that's a position they need to upgrade. Even though when you get Zach back, you don't have that many minutes to fill, I don't think you want to go into the postseason with the kind of situations they've had in the past where they have guys in a rotation that are just not comfortable having in a rotation, like they had with Gilbert Arenas or Ahmed Adati or some other players in the past.
You're listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am Chip Williams, a producer of the program, with Joe Mullinex, the host. We're talking with Chris Harrington. Follow him on Twitter, at HarringtonNBA. Chris, you talked about John Luehr and just kind of how, you know, he's been, I guess, somewhat of a disappointment in your eyes and obviously in the organization's eyes. You know, what do the Grizzlies need to do? Do they need to go out, maybe like you said, find a Louis Scola, Brandon Bass, try to make a trade? or find one of these guys that's maybe, you know, in the D-League, a James Michael McAdoo, maybe a Jermaine O'Neal who's not playing basketball right now. What's the best option to address this backup power forward situation?
Well, it seems like if they do anything significant, it's going to be to address the wing. So I think the power forward thing is going to be a minor move, if anything. It's going to be the kind of things you're talking about, whether it's a free agent who's out there now or will become available as the season wears on. I mean, we see every year that veteran players get waived by lottery teams and sort of find their way onto the market. And the Grizzlies have a history of picking up players late in the season, whether it's Deno Udrih, Gilbert Arenas, Jason Williams, Leon Poe back in the day. They've tended to keep a roster spot open and find somebody late in the season they think can help them. That's certainly a low-cost way they could try to address that. You know, the D-League, you mentioned James Michael McAdoo. They did that last season with James Johnson. So I think they're likely to look at low-cost solutions to that situation and pursue an upgrade on the wing with their better assets, meaning Tayshaun French expiring contract, Kosta Kupas, a potential future draft pick. Those are their primary trade assets. I think if they use any of those primary assets, it's going to be to address the wing, and they'll look to use secondary assets to address power forward or maybe get someone back as a secondary component in a larger deal. So, you know, I don't know that situation gets solved in the next couple of weeks, but I won't be surprised if they don't address that position before the playoffs start.
You mentioned possibly upgrading the wing through trades. Obviously, Mark Stein last night, kind of the big news of the day, said that the Grizzlies were maybe targeting a Luol Deng or Jeff Green to try to address or upgrade their wing, their kind of wing needs, kind of that small forward position that is, that's been an issue for the last several seasons. What are just kind of your general thoughts on making a move like that, specifically Jeff Green, Luol Deng, and also who are some guys that maybe Stein didn't mention that the Grizzlies could possibly target in a move like that?
Well, I think it has to be disappointing for the team to find itself trying to address that position at this point when you went into the season hoping you'd short it up enough, at least for this year. I mean, you went out and you signed Vince Carter in free agency. You had Pondexter coming back from injury. And, you know, Carter just hasn't been healthy. It hasn't found his game. It looked a couple weeks ago like he was getting into a groove. I think he had six games in a row of double figure scoring off the bench, and now he's sort of fallen off again. Pondexter just has not found his game at all this year. So I think that there was a hope at one point early in the season that maybe you had your wing rotation you could get by with, and you wouldn't need to address that. So I think it's disappointing to find yourself thinking you need to, although it's probably accurate. As far as the names out there, I think Luol Deng would be a fabulous fit with the Grizzlies. I tend to believe the most recent reporting that the Heat are not particularly interested in trading him, and that is not a discussion that's really gone very far. I tend to think that's probably true. Jeff Green is a guy the Grizzlies have been debating internally and been talking about for at least two seasons through, you know, multiple front office regimes. That's been percolating for a long time. It would not surprise me if something happened with that. But I don't think there's a strong consensus within the organization about him and his fit. I think everyone probably would allow that he would help the team. Even if he's just an average NBA player, which is what he's looked like in Boston, he would be replacing some below average NBA players, frankly. Because the minutes he would be taking would be Tayshaun Prince, Quincy Pondexter, Allure, who have all performed at a below average level. So even if he is sort of the league average player that he seems to be, that would be an upgrade. I think he would help the team. But I don't know how much you give up to get a player who may be just at that kind of level. But I think it could happen. I'll be interested to see if some other players pop up. Wilson Chandler's name I've thrown out there. He seems expendable. You know, I don't know if the Grizzlies would gamble on a guy like Danilo Gallinari, also in Denver, but that's sort of an interesting name. I think you'll see some other wing players like that pop up in the next couple weeks.
Once again, you are listening to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. That was our guest in this segment, Chris Harrington of the Memphis Commercial Appeal. Follow him on Twitter at HarringtonNBA. I'm also joined by our producer for this program, Chip Williams. And Chris, every week I tweet out a question off of the at GBB Live account on Twitter, excuse me, and I ask the question of the day. And today's question of the day, tying into the Jeff Green question, which has really been the name that has dominated the conversation today. And the question was basically, what would you be comfortable giving up as a Memphis Grizzly, as a fan of the Memphis Grizzlies, or as a member of that front office, whatever it might be, what do you think you would be willing to part with for Jeff Green? And I'm not going to read all of the responses because they were pretty similar in a lot of cases, you know, whether it be the rights to Giannis Timma, which obviously don't have a ton of value. Somebody said a packet of Splenda and my toothbrush. So the point the folks are making is that they're not necessarily excited about that Jeff Green addition. But then somebody tweeted in, his name's Preston Duff, at Sir Zordor, and his point that he makes, he said he found a link on Boston.com, and I was unable to find the actual link to the offer, but he says that there is an offer on the table that's kind of being floated out there, basically including guys like a Evan Turner, Jeff Green, and then Presley, who's a point guard there for them, for Quincy Pondexter, Jordan Adams, Tayshaun Prince, and 2 seconds. Now, once again, I don't have that in front of me. I don't have that verified by any stretch of the imagination, just a rumor that somebody sent our way. But that kind of a deal, even if it includes multiple pieces like that, obviously not necessarily getting that four that we're looking for, maybe a Brandon Bass or a Brandon Wright. But what would you be willing to part with, Chris, to get a Jeff Green? Is a first-round pick in your vision there? Would you be willing to part with a Jordan Adams? Do you think the front office would be willing to part with either of those kinds of high-quality pieces in terms of the future in order to bring in, as you said, basically an average NBA player?
You know, I think it's an interesting question because you wouldn't think you would need to part with a first-round pick to get Jeff Green. If you look at the last couple of years, you know, Rudy Gay got traded twice, and no one in the entire league was willing to give up a first-round pick to get him. Obviously, there was a contract issue there that was a little bit more significant than Jeff Green, although Jeff Green is probably overpaid a little bit. You know, Boston just traded Rajon Rondo, who's a much more significant player than Jeff Green, and they got one, you know, protected first-round pick back in that. So you would think the market value for getting Jeff Green would not require a first-round pick to give up. The problem is that if you're not giving up a first-round pick, I don't know if Boston has that much incentive to deal him. You don't know what's going to happen with this player option this summer. My guess is maybe he opts out for a longer-term deal, although maybe not. Maybe he takes it for one more year with the cap going up. You would think you could hold out and get him without giving up a first-round pick. But Boston could just stand put and not deal him. They don't have to deal him. So I would be reluctant to part with a first-round pick, or certainly Jordan Adams, in a deal to get Green. If I thought it was the only chance I had or the best chance I had to upgrade on the team, I might do it ultimately if there was a heavy protection on the pick. I think I would rather give up a heavily protected future pick than Adams. Well, I'm not 100% sold that Adams is going to be a significant player, but I've seen enough to feel like there's a chance for that. And I think if my choice is Jordan Adams or the number 20 pick in four years, I would rather roll the dice on Jordan Adams.
And I think most folks would agree with you on that. And I'm with you, Chris, in terms of not being fully sold on Jordan Adams as that significant player. But you're exactly right. He's shown enough in flashes that he is capable of doing things that this Grizzlies team needs, getting to the free throw line, shooting three-point shots, and being a more efficient scorer than really they have on the entire roster. So Adams has value in that role. The first rounder. Go ahead.
He's only 20 years old. That's sure. The thing. If you show the ability to play at age 20 against the NBA competition, and he's been very good in the D League, and he's had flashes in NBA play at age as a 20 year old rookie, and you see sort of the natural offensive skill there. I mean, I feel like he's a pretty good bet to be a rotation player in the league. Whether he becomes a quality starter, I don't know. But I think, you know, if you're patient with him, you have pretty good odds of getting a rotation player out of Jordan Adams, which is a good thing to get with a pick in the 20s.
No, you're absolutely right. That would be a good sign of the John Hollinger front office, obviously not just John. But, you know, he scored very highly on that on those scales that he uses in terms of measuring out players, and we'll talk about analytics here in a moment. But the idea of Adams and Stokes being those solid rotation guys if you look ahead, and this kind of goes into what we'll talk about next as an all-in kind of season, those are guys that you're counting on moving forward. You know, maybe in a couple of years, Jordan Adams at the age of 22 will be ready to possibly replace a Courtney Lee as a starting shooting guard. Maybe he won't. You don't know. But you do know that you have that set asset on your roster now who has that potential, and you might want to see it through. So I think that it is fair to say that you don't want to necessarily part with a Jordan Adams at this time. But moving on to our next point here, Chris, looking at this roster, the starting lineup, the depth, how they are set as is, you know, people talk about, myself included, how unique this team is, the chemistry that they have, how they truly seem to play for each other, how they seem to have such good relationships with one another on and off the court. But as you said, the people that would be being replaced in terms of minutes by Jeff Green, you know, those are below average NBA players if people are being honest and kind of taking off the grizzly bear blue shaded glasses. Chemistry versus talent, the setup of the roster, can this team as is win an NBA championship in your mind?
If healthy, I think it can, but I think this is a season where there may be like 12 teams who could make the same claim. I think that's how open it is. And the reality is that they could win a title. They are more likely to lose in the first round than win a title, and that might be true of every team in the Western Conference playoff picture. So, you know, I would advise people not to, you know, to get too ahead of themselves. I mean, I've always been of the opinion that you enjoy the regular season, and it's not just preamble. That every game is sort of is interesting and is worthy of sort of appreciation, and that you don't judge a season on strictly on how far you go. I think this team is capable of making a big run in the playoffs. I think they're capable of losing in the first round. I think this is going to be a year when there's no such thing as an upset in the Western Conference playoffs. And so, yeah, if this team gets healthy, it is a puncher's chance to get out of the conference and to win a title, and just like all these other teams do, I would not be, you know, because of that, I think they should be cautious about shaking up the roster, but they should not be unwilling to do so. And it's pretty clear from what we've seen lately that they are not unwilling to do so. I think some kind of minor shakeup is probably best for the team in terms of upgrading its chances. And as long as you don't mess with that core, Marc Gasol, Mike Conley, Zach Randolph, Tony Allen, if you don't mess with those guys, I don't think you're messing with your chemistry, really.
Once again, we are talking with Chris Harrington of the Memphis Commercial Appeal, also of ESPN's True Hoop Network. Follow him on Twitter, at HarringtonNBA. And earlier today on Twitter, Chris, you put out that you were a fan of analytics, but maybe not of the word, and maybe you can correct me. I don't want to, you know, misquote the tweet. But you spoke about maybe hating the word analytics. I just want to get a quick take. What do you mean by that in terms of your views on analytics overall, or at least the word?
Yeah, I've said that before. I'm a little bit of a curmudgeon on that topic. I don't want people who maybe have not read my stuff for a long time to misunderstand. I'm not against using, quote-unquote, advanced statistics. In fact, to be honest, I was the first writer in Memphis to do so, and for many years I was the only writer in Memphis to do so. But I just think the word analytics is pretentious, to be honest with you, at least as it pertains to sports. Because most of the stat stuff that people are using in sports, at least at the level of writers and things that are in the public, it's not really that complicated. I mean, you use the word analytics, makes it sound like you're doing really intensive stuff, and a lot of the times it's not really that in depth or that hard to deal with. And so I think analytics is a little pretentious, the word. I think it's a little alienating to people instead of inviting to readers that maybe are not as up on that stuff. I will say that analytics is a better term than advanced analytics, which you see a lot, which is sort of a linguistic crime in some ways, because if the whole idea of analytics is these are advanced statistics, and I mean, what are advanced analytics? Advanced statistics? So I guess, you know, I just think there's a little bit of an aftertaste in the degree of which the stat stuff has become democratized over the last 4 or 5 years on the internet is mostly a good thing, but I think it's become so accessible that discernment with it, so people tend to run with it, and a lot of stuff you see now is, hey, everybody, check out these fancy stats I looked up on the internet. Instead of stepping back to use it as a component to think through things and think about what things mean and what they don't mean, and maybe a little bit more humble about, you know, the degree to which you can really know things, even with the stats. So I just think it's run amok a little bit to the degree that it gets misused more than it used to when there were fewer people using it. But that's me just being like, I don't know, a stats hipster or curmudgeon or something, because, you know, I started using a lot of that stuff 10 years ago, and it just wasn't out there as much, and now it's just all over the place, and I think people maybe sometimes not as thoughtful with it as they used to be or that they could be.
Well,
but I don't like the word analytics.
I think that you made a very good point there in that, you know, the word and people using it, whether it be on Twitter or on blogs or other posts, heck, even in national articles, you see, you know, national writers sometimes using them in ways that kind of make it try to sound like, you know, I know more than you, or, you know, this proves my point beyond a shadow of a doubt, when in reality it doesn't. Those advanced statistics, analytics, whatever you want to call them, at the end of the day, it's just another method of measuring and kind of seeing where a player fits and how things work. It's not the end-all, be-all, and it certainly isn't a finalizing mean to say, oh, his offensive efficiency is that low, he must not be able to play. Well, it doesn't always work that way. A player such as a Tony Allen can't necessarily be measured by a specific statistic. You got to actually watch the games. You got to take into account the energy that they bring. That there's stuff
right.
that, you know, numbers certainly can't fully understand and fully can't show that, you know, can really make all the difference to an NBA team or any team for that matter as analytics grow in sports. So I think you make a great point there for sure.
Well, I mean, basketball is very contextual in a way that you, no matter how much you study a player on film or on numbers or in any way, you can never fully know what a player is going to do going forward as the context changes. I mean, it's sort of a, that's another sort of problem with it, is that sometimes people will act like past performance is a guarantee of future results. And stats will not tell you what will happen. Stats can tell you what has happened. And you sort of have to be, you know, willing to allow that may not be predict the future. But I don't want to sound like anti-stats guy, because I'm not. I mean, like I said, I grew up reading Bill James. I was an early adopter of that stuff. And one of the things you'll see, that to sort of look at it the other way, is that a lot of times the people who complain about it the most, it's not like they don't use stats. It's very hard to deal with sports as a writer or a broadcaster or in any way and not use stats at all. There are some writers who do, columnists and such. But most people do, and it's just, you know, to me, the basic thing is to think about, when you're using numbers, think about what they mean and what they don't mean and whether or not they mean what you're purporting that they mean. And that was sort of the origin of a lot of this stuff, because people would use stats like points per game and to convey a meaning that wasn't really behind that stat. You know, that's how when we first started, people sort of first started to point out the pace effect of things. You know, scoring a lot of points per game as a team doesn't necessarily mean you're a good offense. It could just mean you play fast. And so, to me, the point was thinking about the game. Use the numbers as an expression of thought instead of, you know, some starting point or end point. It's just, it's sort of, when the advanced stats stuff started with Bill James back in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't about statistics, it was about critical thinking. And thinking manifested itself in mathematical terms. And I think it's gotten away from the critical thinking component sometimes. I'm rambling there.
No, you're not right. I would agree completely. I'm not going to add on to that anymore because you said it pretty well. We're wrapping up here with Chris Harrington of the Commercial Appeal in Memphis and of ESPN's True Hoop Network. And, Chris, as we look ahead to January at large in particular, hopefully Zach Randolph, it sounds like he had a much better practice today, was able to go through maybe a little bit more than he had been. Hopefully he's back for the Pelicans game Friday night. If not that game, maybe Sunday at home against Phoenix, who he has had tremendous success against in the past. Maybe that's a good game to get him back in the swing of things with. Looking ahead to January, what do you think makes it a successful month for these Grizzlies? Do you think 12-4 is a good record? Do you think maybe a little bit less? Obviously, they've already played some games this month, so they might not be able to get to that level. But it's certainly an easier schedule for the Grizzlies in January than it was in December. And they're 2-2 as they sit right now heading into New Orleans Friday night. What makes a successful January for you, aside from the fact of just getting healthy?
Oh, I'd have to take a closer look at the schedule to give you a number, to put a number on it. you know, obviously you want to have a winning record, and assuming you get Randolph back, you want to be several games above 500. And it's really more about sort of what's going on around you in the Western Conference. They're third right now, just by a sliver, I think, ahead of Dallas, less than half of a game. You know, I don't think you want to fall out of that top six in the West. I think that's going to stay pretty well jumbled, but it's tight enough that if you start getting down below six, then suddenly you start worrying about missing the playoffs, because there are going to be more than eight playoff caliber teams in the conference. So you want to stay in that higher level just to, you know, to feel like you're comfortably in the mix. I'd have to look at the schedule, but I feel like, you know, you want to be several games above 500, you know, the rest of the way this month. And if you do that, you should be in okay shape.
I think that's fair, Chris. And obviously, like you said, taking a closer look at the schedule would be good. So let's condense it here a little bit. We'll take a look at the three games between our ending our show now and the next, you know, 10 minutes or so. And our next time we're on the air, January 15th, there's three games. They're at New Orleans on Friday night. Then Sunday, they welcome Phoenix to the FedEx Forum. That should be a good test for the Grizzlies. And then they head to Brooklyn for the Lionel Hollins Bowl, so to speak, as they re-engage with Lionel and the Nets. So looking at those three games, Matt Erdlicka earlier before you came on said 1-2 would be a good goal. How do you feel about that? Do you think 1-2 is realistic? Do you think maybe 2-1, a winning record? What do you see out of the next coming week? What should be the goal for the Grizzlies?
1-2 would be a good goal? Erdlicka is setting his sights pretty low.
I misspoke. Maybe he didn't mean that was a good goal, but maybe he that's just kind of what he thought was going to happen. I misinterpreted that.
Matt's one of my favorite guys on Twitter and in terms of Grizzlies writing on the internet. So I'm goofing on him on that. I'm a fan of his. But, no, I would think you would want to go 2-1. I mean, all three of those games are winnable. And so, you know, if you're a good team, you know, if you take toss-up games, if you're a good team, you should win more toss-up games than you lose. So if all three of those are essentially toss-up games, you'd like to go 2-1 if you're a good team, I would say.
I think that's good. I would agree. I think 2-1, all those games are realistic, are possible wins. Matt, he just tweeted out trying to be most realistic, so I apologize, Matt. I'll correct it there. But, yes, I think that 2-1 should be the goal. 2-1 is realistic in my view, and that Phoenix game really is kind of the tipping point, and that'll be an interesting one to see how they perform at home against those Phoenix Suns. Chris, thank you so much. You've been a fantastic guest. We really enjoyed having you on, and we're most certainly going to have you on again in the future.
Sure. Thanks, guys.
All right. Thank you so much. That was Chris Harrington of the Memphis Commercial Appeal. Once again, follow him on Twitter at HarringtonNBA, also ESPN's True Hoop Network. He writes for them, and he really is the best. He is the best in terms of writing on the Grizzlies out there. He's getting more national attention than he had in the past, and it's well-deserved. And we were very excited to have Chris on, and that was an excellent segment. And I'll bring Chip Williams back in here. Chip, pretty impressive segment there from Chris Harrington. And when somebody with the wherewithal and the understanding of the Grizzlies, like a Chris Harrington, says that they're capable of winning an NBA championship as they are when healthy, it does make you kind of hit pause for a second about what a trade would look like for the Grizzlies.
Hey, yeah, it does. And it's obviously good to hear Chris have that much confidence in the Grizzlies. And I kind of think on the same wavelength. Like, the whole thing that's going to matter for them is just health. You know, can they stay healthy through the playoffs and through this, you know, this kind of second half of the season? I know we're not exactly at the halfway point, but, you know, you don't want to have to sustain a bunch of injuries or battle through a lot of injuries. You know, this Zach Randolph thing obviously has not gone well, and the Marc Gasol thing didn't go well last year. So if they can stay healthy, they can get one of these top three seeds like Matt talked about, and then kind of all bets are off. You know, the West is so much parity in the West. These teams are all very good, and the Grizzlies play a very good style in terms of going into the playoffs and that slow it down, kind of grind it out pace that's played in playoff basketball. And the Grizzlies have had a lot of success. So to hear a guy like Chris Harrington say that, that he thinks that they can win a championship is currently constructed is good to hear. And I thought it was a great podcast, man. We had two or three, if you include Chris, really great guests on this week.
I would agree. That was a pretty good way to get 2015 started. I was pretty excited when we got Chris. and obviously Matt as well. That's a great way to celebrate our anniversary as well, and that's kind of going to be my parting shot tonight. You know, 1 year we've been doing this podcast, and it just kind of started out as a goal of mine to do this kind of stuff, podcasting or radio work. I've always really thought about trying it out, and once I started on with GrizzlyBearBlues.com, having the opportunity to do it was a goal of mine, and talking with Chris and getting it going last year. And the opportunities that I've had to talk with people like Amin El-Hassan, obviously Chris Harrington just now, Matt Moore of CBS, you know, we've really had some remarkable guests, Rick Trotter, other folks from the Grizzlies organization, Jason March, assistant coach for the Grizzlies. It's been a pretty awesome ride, and every guest that we've ever had, I'm very thankful for, and I'm very appreciative of this past year doing this show. I'm appreciative of Chip coming on and doing great work with Grizzly Bear Blues Live himself. And now, as we kind of tag team it up here, appreciative of him, appreciative of Chris, and everybody over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. So happy anniversary to Grizzly Bear Blues Live. And most importantly, thanks to you guys out there listening. You're the reason we do it, and you're the reason that the show continues to have success in terms of us. You know, we're fans just trying to talk about the team and really looking and learning and just expressing basketball, you know, something that so many of us are so passionate about. So thanks to you, thanks to Chip, as I just said, thanks to Chris, thank you to Matt Ardlicka, the senior staff writer for GrizzlyBearBlues.com, for joining us tonight, as well as Chris Harrington from the Memphis Commercial Appeal and ESPN's True Hoop Network. Truly a great anniversary show. I couldn't have asked for much better. Next week, we are back on a regular schedule, Thursday, January 15th, 6:30 Central Time will be the recording time, and we're excited about our guest next week too, Chip. We've got Anthony Sane, who ever since his new site launched, blueworldorder.com, seems to, you know, being a little bit more antsy and a little bit more feisty than he's been in the past. John Luehr has been the center of conversation, who I know you're a big fan of, and it seems like Mr. Sane is not. So I think I might let you take over about half of that segment next week, Chip, and just let you guys have a little brawl.
Me and Sane is my buddy. I mean, that's my guy. But we certainly do not see eye to eye on everything. So, yeah, me and Sane may have to duke it out a little bit. Could be a pretty entertaining podcast next week. Certainly with Matt Moore. That's a guarantee to be awesome. But, yeah, Anthony Sane coming on. Obviously going to have Chris again. So, we just follow up one great one with another one. So I'm excited for it.
That's exactly right. We're going to have Anthony Sane next week. We'll also, as Chip just said, have Matt Moore of CBSSports.com, of at HP Basketball Twitter fame. You talk about Twitter legends in terms of basketball Twitter. He is certainly one of those guys at the top of the list, also a great writer for CBSSports.com. So we look forward to having Sane and Moore on the show next week. Hopefully you are listening live. If not listening live, hopefully you found our podcasted version of the show. In 2015, we're going to be looking into options in terms of iTunes and other things like that, trying to get the show a little bit more exposure. Hopefully you find the show on the site. There's a recap that goes up that I write up over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Check out the recap. Listen to the podcast if you missed it, and find other great articles. Open up another tab and check out all the great work that our writers do over at GrizzlyBearBlues.com. Once again, thank you to audibletrial.com/GrizzlyBearBlues. Sign up, get yourself a membership, and get yourself an opportunity to help us make a donation to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Thank you to Chris Faulkner. Thank you to my producer, Chip Williams. Thank you to our guests, Matt Ardlicka and Chris Harrington. I am your host, Joe Mullinax. Grind forth, Grizz Nation. This is Grizzly Bear Blues Live.